With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Napa Valley wine grape growers testified before a House panel on wildfire dangers. As the 2017 Tubbs fire was bearing down his vineyard, sixth-generation Napa Valley wine grape grower Johnny White battled the blaze with the St. Helena Fire Department. White testified last week before the House Committee on Natural Resources about the consequences of fires on rural communities, urging proactive steps, including increasing removal of wildfire fuels. He told lawmakers that, quote, our industry continues to witness damage and destruction to our livestock, commodities, farms, ranches, wineries, farm homes, employee housing, and equipment. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Changes to salary pay. The minimum wage will increase to $16 an hour in 2024. Teresa Keene, president and CEO of AgSafe, says there will be also an increase for salary paid workers.
This is a piece I think that a lot of folks miss. And so for your exempt employees, so essentially they mean exempt from overtime, it's your managers and your supervisors that have duties that can make financial decisions, they direct people's work, all those folks essentially get double of the minimum wage. So when you're doing the math, it's $32 an hour at 40 hours per week for like an annual salary this next coming year of $66,526. Wow, which is an increase of just a tick over $2,000 from 2023.
Stay tuned as we'll hear more on this topic in the coming shows. But for right now, here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
Nearly $30 million is being distributed by USDA to help support the Healthy Meals Incentives Initiative. Deputy Agriculture Secretary Sochel Torres-Small explains how the funding will benefit the nutritional quality of school meals.
USDA recognizes that school nutrition professionals serve the kids in their community every day, and they face real challenges in doing so. And particularly in rural places, when you've got a smaller population and lower student size, it becomes even more difficult to be able to pull together the funds to have an operating kitchen that has all of the necessities to make sure that meal can be as healthy as possible and as tasty as possible. With these awards, each small and or rural school district will receive up to $150,000 to support them in improving the nutritional quality of their meals and modernizing their operations. And so these efforts will include innovative staff training programs, kitchen updates and renovations, redesigning food preparation and service spaces, as well as other school district-led efforts to support school meals and school nutrition professionals.
Manufacturers from around the world will be showcasing their solutions to the labor and environmental challenges faced by farmers at FIRA USA 2023. The event will take place at the Salinas Sports Complex from September 19th through the 21st and will feature more than 20 demos and 35 robots on display. High-profile panel discussions and speakers will be highlighting the latest developments in robotics. Some of the featured speakers include individuals from Grimway Farms, Duda Fresh, and Taylor Farms for the production side, and John Deere, Gus, and Blue White from the industry side. Safety, market, investors, and tech experts will also be joining the discussions. Some of the VIPs who will be speaking include CDFA Secretary Karen Ross and UC Agriculture and Natural Resources VP Glenda Humiston. More information about the event is available at FIRA-AgTech.com. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, Senior Vice President of Futures Brokers R.J. Bryan, Zolt Vince, says the initial harvest from Ukraine showed good yields due to good weather, but the value may not be as good.
The farmers use less chemicals and fertilizer, so the protein is quite a bit lower on a good portion of the crop. It's anywhere from 7, 8, or 9% protein. So that's why they have been aggressively offering feed wheat for sale from the Black Sea. My sources are telling me that the farmers are not selling the 11.5 pro wheat. They're holding on to that, and they're just trying to part with the feed wheat.
Vince made the comments during a Northern Crops Institute marketing webinar. He says Eastern Europe has the largest share of feed wheat this year, and even the Baltics are having problems with wheat quality.
And overall, there's less milling wheat available than previous years, and I think that is also reflected in the price spread between feed wheat and milling wheat in those markets.
Meanwhile, Russian airstrikes on southern Ukraine overnight damaged grain silos and warehouses at one of the Danube River ports, a key facility for grain shipments, that according to the governor of the Odessa region of the Black Sea. As for the U.S., Vince says durum wheat prices have been sharply rising.
Durum prices skyrocketed, and the farmer is not selling. For reference, if you will, elevator in Minot, North Dakota is posted at $10.75 for durum for right now. And I understand that the farmers are not selling. The selling ideas are several dollars above that level. Generally speaking, I think just like milling wheat, I think the quality durum is going to be tight this year.
In other news, a new report issued by the Center for a Humane Economy and Animal Wellness Action directly responded to opposition to the Ending Agricultural Trade Suppression, or EATS, Act. The group say that a diversified pig production sector is already in place to meet the demand created by Prop 12 in California and Question 3 in Massachusetts for more humanely raised pork. Wayne Pacelli, president of the Center for a Humane Economy, claims groups like the National Pork Producers Council are using false arguments to make their points.
One falsehood is that the California measure and the Massachusetts measure banned farrowing crates. That is untrue. An honest reading of the statutes that were adopted, thanks to the actions of voters, indicate that the only restricted practice has to do, in terms of production strategies, with gestation crates, which are pre-birthing crates. We've heard from a number of the lawmakers that this measure is so terrible that it would allow the crushing of the piglets. Again, it's just erroneous.
He says California and Massachusetts voters are not telling other farmers across the country how to raise pigs.
We've heard from NPPC that California is 15% of the market for U.S.-produced pork. And then you add Massachusetts onto that, it gets to about 20%. Our report today shows that California and Massachusetts combined, adding up all of the market demand in both states, given a proper reading of the ballot measure, accounts for 6%, not 15%, not 20% of U.S. production. So in short, 6% of production would satisfy the entire demand for California and Massachusetts based on population and past consumption patterns in those states.
Pacelli says the laws will not shut down all pork shipments into California and Massachusetts. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, despite the imitators on the market, real dairy continues to be a vital part of the global diet. Southeast AgNet's Will Jordan says you can feel good about consuming dairy.
Though facing serious competition from products labeled as milk, dairy continues to be a vital part of the global diet, no matter your preference of product. Dairy producers work hard to produce a wholesome product, and because of its unique fat behavior, you can feel good about consuming dairy, according to Dr. Chris Cefelli, Senior Vice President of Nutrition Research for the National Dairy Council.
I think a key takeaway for parents, families, is there is a milk for everyone, and they're all equally healthy. So whole milk, reduced fat milk, non-fat milk, all have the same 13 essential nutrients. They're all got the high quality protein, and they're going to improve your health overall. So you really can fit whatever milk that you enjoy into your daily routine. When it comes to the heart health benefits, again, research for decades now has continually shown that the fat found in dairy products doesn't behave as you would kind of predict if you just kind of looked at the scientific equations. The dairy matrix is so unique. The composition that makes up the milk fat globule membrane in particular is so complex.
For more information, visit southeastagnet.com. From the Southeast Agnet, I'm Will Jordan.
Thanks, Will. Speaking of dairy, the World Dairy Expo has announced it'll host a dairy symposium featuring the dairy business innovation initiatives from across the country. This will all take place on October 3rd of this year from 8 till 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Registration is now open for this historic event. Now, the dairy business initiatives were established as a part of the 2018 Farm Bill. The four regional DBI initiatives provide direct technical assistance and subawards to dairy businesses to develop, produce, market, and distribute dairy products. The Dairy Symposium at World Dairy Expo includes a presentation by each of the initiatives about their regional efforts. Now, the Dairy Symposium will feature a panel that includes a representative from each of the DBI initiatives. Now, the four DBI initiatives include the Pacific Coast Coalition Dairy Business Initiative, that's out of California, the Southeast Dairy Business Innovation Initiative out of Tennessee, the Northeast Dairy Business Innovation Initiative out of Vermont, and the Dairy Business Initiative Alliance out of Wisconsin. The Dairy Symposium is free to attend with paid admission to the World Dairy Expo. To learn more about it, you can go to the World Dairy Expo website, worlddairyexpo.com. And a quick note, according to a report from CoBank, U.S. consumers remain interested in plant-based meat alternatives, but higher prices have led many prospective return consumers to taper off their purchases. The CoBank report notes that plant-based meat sales peaked in 2020, but fewer than half of Americans who tried the products at the time repeated their purchase. Sales of meat alternatives have actually fallen steadily since 2021. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
If you gained a bit of weight during the pandemic, you weren't alone. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows that adult obesity increased during the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. Broad efforts to contain COVID-19 included travel, work, and social restrictions. Such behavioral adjustments disrupted the dietary and activity patterns of U.S. adults. The percentage of adults with obesity was 40.7% in early 2020. 1 year later, that rate grew by 1.8 percentage points to 42.5%. There was not an immediate substantial increase when the pandemic began. Rather, the obesity rate was statistically indistinguishable from the pre-pandemic prevalence during the first 3 months of the pandemic, which was May through March of 2020, at 40.8%. The total obesity rate increase from March 2020 to March 2021 was more than triple the average yearly growth rate of 0.5 percentage points in the preceding decade. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan. When selling the farm, how much land can be carved out and sold with the farm home to qualify for a special tax break for gain attributable to the sale of the principal residence? The tax code provides for the exclusion of gain that is attributable to the sale of the taxpayer's principal residence. The maximum exclusion is $500,000 for married taxpayers that file jointly. It's one half of that amount for single filers. In addition, the provision only applies to the taxpayer's principal residence. But if the residence is sold with the farm, how much, if any, of the farmland and outbuildings can be included with the residence to fill up that $500,000 amount? Under IRS regulations, farmland can be treated as part of the principal residence if it is adjacent to land containing the principal residence and is used as part of the principal residence. The IRS rulings and court decisions indicate that the barnyard and areas used in connection with the home can be included as the residence portion of the sale. Also, local zoning rules can come into play. The cases and rulings, of course, are fact-specific, with the outcome of each situation dependent on the facts involved. But in many situations, it's likely that some land can be included with the sale of the principal residence under the gain exclusion rule. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan.
Since its initial release last year, USDA's Market News mobile app has progressed and expanded its capabilities.
We started in February of 2022, and that version included our livestock and poultry reports. So that was over 800 reports containing commodities from cattle to grains, et cetera. We came out in June of 2022 with version 2 and expanded that to include cotton and tobacco, dairy, and specialty crops. Be able to search commodity areas, market types. We added some features where you can save your favorites, subscribe, etc., making it very easy for end users to use this application.
An Agricultural Marketing Service Associate Deputy Administrator Taylor Cox says the most recent version of the app introduced this summer continues the expansion of available data and functions.
Version 3 expanded again for more commodities, which included organic, retail market reports, and international market reports.
He notes how far the availability of market news data and real-time data has come in just a couple of years.
What you have is a portfolio available to you through Market News. Our traditional method would be to find those market reports on our website. A couple of years ago, for some of our more advanced users, we released an API, which allowed them to build that technology, that programming, the coding, to download large amounts of data. Now we have this app that continues to be expanded upon, built upon.
And how methods of data presentation, including through the Market News mobile app, will appear going forward.
We're branching into data visualization dashboarding that users will see with a new livestock auction dashboard that our Market News group also released in July.
The app is available both at Apple and Android stores for download onto smart devices. And Cox says that should give producers increased access to data, especially as they work in the field, barn, pasture, ranch, or orchard.
We know they're not always able to sit in an office and have accessibility through a desktop. So what tools like this app do is allow them to pull that cell phone out of their pocket, click on the app, be able to just very easily access their favorite market reports, stay very much abreast on market conditions, volumes, prices, all the things that our desktop reports give you just in the convenience of having that in your hand.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
The phrase, little things mean a lot, might be appropriate looking at the grain trade here near the end of the week. I'm Mark Oppold with today's bottom line report brought to you by Helena. After a near dollar drop in corn futures the past month, a small bounce may seem insignificant, but if December corn can hold 478, 480 by the close tomorrow, if November soybeans can close above 1305, and if September Kansas City wheat can hold that 735, 734 level, those are important technical numbers going into a hot, dry week ahead. The dry part already starting, very seldom do we look at a map of the lower 48 and see minimal to no rain events. This is the bottom line report. Our report is brought to you by Resurge from Helena. Make the most of your valuable fertilizer by improving your soil quality with humic compounds from Resurge. Visit HelenaAgri.com to learn more. We're coming to the end of the corporate earnings season. Deere & Company released before the open tomorrow. And tomorrow's monthly cattle on feed report expected to show July placements down 5 to 7% from a year ago. There are some private estimates showing down 8 to 9%. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
The Ukrainian wheat harvest has mixed results so far. Senior Vice President of Futures Brokers R.J. Bryan, Zolt Vince, says the initial harvest from Ukraine showed good yields due to good weather, but the value may not be as good.
The farmers use less chemicals and fertilizer, so the protein is quite a bit lower on a good portion of the crop. It's anywhere from 7, 8, or 9% protein, so that's why they have been aggressively offering feed wheat for sale from the Black Sea. My sources are telling me that the farmers are not selling the 11.5 pro wheat. They're holding on to that and they're just trying to part with the feed wheat.
He says Eastern Europe has the largest share of feed wheat this year, and even the Baltics are having problems with wheat quality. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
New data from the Department of Agriculture shows consumer food spending habits are changing over time. Michael Clements shares more.
USDA's Economic Research Service's Food Expenditure Series shows consumer spending preferences are changing. Danny Munch, American Farm Bureau Federation economist, says most notably, food away from home spending has exceeded food at home spending.
Spending away from home surpassed food at home spending by over $300 million last year, the largest gap ever. The biggest categories there are full service restaurants at about 34% of spending away from home and quick service restaurants at about 34% of food away from home. Food sold at merchandise stores and vending machines have gone up, the largest increase for food spending away from home.
Munch says there are many ways consumers are changing how they purchase food.
Traditionally, grocery stores consistently captured the largest market share of what people were purchasing to eat at home. That percentage has gone down significantly. So, for instance, in 1999, grocery stores accounted for 72% of all at-home expenditures. Last year, that had dropped down over the course of 25 years to 50% of at-home spending. Much of that decline was because of the growth of warehouse clubs and supercenters and home delivery.
Munch says there are regional differences in the data as well.
So, for instance, in rural Northeast states like New Hampshire and Maine, food costs on average are already higher than the rest of the country. But because they have such high rural populations, folks eat at home more often, so they spend more money on food at home versus places like Hawaii, Nevada, which has Las Vegas, and Florida, where there's much more tourism happening and people spend a lot more money away from home. I mean, it's important for farmers to be aware of these changes because it influences how their products are ultimately sold.
Learn more on the market intel page at fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Food prices at the grocery store are still rising. They were up 0.4% last month. Those kinds of monthly price hikes are worrisome, of course, but
they're still lower than what we were seeing at this time last year,
when prices were skyrocketing. This from Ag Department economist Megan Schweitzer, to whom we will return in a moment. But to set the stage, I'm going to play a segment of the food price story we did exactly a year ago with USDA economist Matt McLaughlin, when monthly and yearly food price hikes were just about at their peak. Remember, this little segment is from 1 year ago. We've changed the sound quality to emphasize that this next segment was from August 2022, so you won't faint thinking it's today.
For the U.S. economy as a whole, the rate of inflation last month went down to zero. The price of gas, for example, dropped by almost 8%. But while the rate of price hikes for some items slowed down,
food did not.
No, it did not. Agriculture Department economist Matt McLaughlin says that according to the Consumer Price Index covering July,
for food at home, we saw a 1.4% increase.
That July hike in grocery store food prices leading to
a 13.1% year-over-year increase between July of 21 and July of 22.
And now, fast forward back to the present. That 13% yearly increase in food prices last July was the largest such increase in food prices since 1979. So let's bring in economist Megan Schweitzer again here and take a look at the latest Consumer Price Index, which covers what happened in July. Yes, grocery store prices did show a 0.4% increase in July, but Megan says,
even though we're seeing marginal increases this month, our year-over-year food price increases are still coming down. So for food at home, prices in July of 2023 were up 3.6% from July of 2022.
Megan says in an average year, grocery store food prices generally do go up, with the average yearly increase being about 2 to 2.5%. And so with prices currently running about 3.5% higher than a year ago,
price growth does seem to have leveled off at a place that's largely in line with long-term averages.
Megan says July's price hike might have been lower than it was, but for some higher prices, for example, at the meat counter.
Beef and veal in particular rose 2.4% this month over last month, and pork increased 1%.
Those increases partially offset by price declines for seafood, poultry, and eggs, especially eggs.
The eggs were down 2.2% over the month. That brings eggs down to a decrease of 13.7% over the year.
And eggs are costing 36% less right now from their peak back in January of this year. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for, harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet, or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Welcome back to the show. For today's interview segment, Agnet West Brian German talks with Adam Borchard about the involvement of California Fresh Fruit Association with the specialty crop farm bill.
We're joined by Adam Borchard this morning, Director of Government and Public Policy for the California Fresh Fruit Association. And now, Adam, you're typically engaged in a lot of issues impacting farmers. And so what are some of the things you're working on and keeping tabs on?
Yeah, so currently for the work of the California Fresh Fruit Association, both the California legislature and the Congress in D.C. are on summer recess. The state legislature resumes its last month of session on Monday, and Congress is back in session after Labor Day. I'll say on the congressional federal front, Congress is going to be working on appropriation for USDA as well as reauthorization on the Farm Bill. CFFA is a member of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, and we have been very active in various initiatives to promote the specialty crop industry, most notably in working with Congressman Valadao's office on H.R. 5061, which is the Specialty Crop Domestic Promotion Program Act, and H.R. 5062, the Specialty Crop Mechanization Assistance Act. And both of those measures have bipartisan support among California's congressional delegation and across the U.S. Coming back to California, in the last month of session, a lot of the bills that fortunately have been defeated in the policy committee hearings in the second house took care of a lot of the water rights proposals, reform, quote unquote, reform proposals, but there are a few lingering bills out there, as well as bills that deal with pesticide usage that we continue to advocate on. So we'll have a busy August into September on behalf of the fresh fruit industry.
And just kind of picking those apart a little bit on the federal side with I've been tracking the specialty crop kind of things that are being talked about. You said it's a bipartisan effort there. Is there I know it's hard to speculate, but is it seemingly getting a pretty robust amount of support in terms of, you know, getting that moving forward and hopefully in there for specialty crop growers?
Yeah, we think so. Obviously, the budget number is going to be the critical factor, as we've seen this year with the Congress. But there is bipartisan support and support across the country in the specialty crop industries in the states that are affected. You know, it's kind of remarkable that we're able to promote our industry abroad, but we're not able to in the domestic market. And then with respect to mechanization, we're not looking for a complete federal handout. What we're looking is a cost share with private partners, where the similar to what we do on EQIP for conservation measures, just providing additional funding that helps leverage growers to be able to buy mechanized equipment for their operations.
And you've been at this for quite some time, and you know, the Farm Bill hasn't historically been overly focused in specialty crops, but you know, in the last couple of cycles, does it seem like specialty crops maybe have maybe unified or brought a collective voice to maybe get some more support specifically for specialty crops in the Farm Bill?
Yeah, and definitely we made great advances in the 2018 Farm Bill, and we're hoping to build on those advances. And it does help for our industry that we're able to promote. It's a domestic supply of healthy and nutritious food for hopefully a U.S. domestic consumer base. So yeah, we're optimistic that we can make further advances both on the nutrition front and then on various efforts within industry. And we're increasingly more acting more in unison with our partners in different states and different organizations as well.
You're listening to AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
back. You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The U.S. welcomes a WTO report on China trade relations. The U.S. Trade Representative's Office welcomed a report from the World Trade Organization calling U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs justified for security reasons. The WTO report recognized that U.S. Section 232 actions on steel and aluminum are security measures and that China illegally retaliated with sham safeguard tariffs. The panel rejected China's argument that the U.S. Section 232 actions are safeguard measures that may be rebalanced under WTO rules. However, officials from China called on the U.S. to lift the tariffs imposed on Chinese products following the report. China's Commerce Ministry claims that the root cause lies in the unilateralist and protectionist nature of the United States. China maintains that its actions are, quote, a legitimate move to safeguard its legitimate rights and interest. Tariffs imposed on American agriculture exports in retaliation for Section 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum imports led to an overall $27 billion reduction in U.S. agriculture exports from mid-2018 to the end of 2019. NAFB contributed to that report.
The California Fresh Food Association is monitoring multiple issues in the state legislature. CFFA Director of Government and Public Policy Adam Borchard said there are several measures concerning the use of water on ag land with respect to water rights.
We're advocating for the continued use of the priority system, first in time, first in right. I think what we see across different allied organizations, particularly for urban water users such as the City and County of San Francisco and the City of Los Angeles, is that they perfected their water rights to their various sources pretty early in their development. So any radical change can have impacts to their ability to have reliable and sustainable water supply for their population. So that's an example of where we find unity, not just within agriculture and within the irrigation supplier community interest groups, but with urban water providers as well.
Borchard noted they're also focused on other issues they're not typically engaged in.
One issue is rural health care, particularly after the closure of Madera Community Hospital last December and December 2022. So we've been advocating for additional state support for rural hospitals and working with community interest groups to advance additional funding in that area.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
The group is led by CEO and Executive Chairman Tom Bias, former CEO of Growth Energy and President of the National Farmers Union. He says the alliance was formed to talk about the benefits of the technology to everyone in rural America.
Everyone from the farmers that grow the corn to ethanol producers and the communities that these plants reside in. Oftentimes the debate has been about a lot of emotional issues and not necessarily about the benefits. So we created an alliance, and this alliance is to bring in everybody and anyone who's involved in the carbon capture industry in rural America to talk about these benefits. We just want them to be part of the debate, not exclusively based on emotional issues.
He talks about some of the specific benefits that carbon capture offers to rural America.
It lowers the carbon index for the production of ethanol, and the production of ethanol then qualifies for any future fuels. Sustainable aviation fuel, for example, is a potential 100 billion gallon market worldwide, and the airline companies are all under the gun to reduce their carbon score. And ethanol won't qualify as a feedstock to produce sustainable aviation fuel unless we get our carbon index down. So the ripple effect backs it up, where you have less demand for corn, and less demand for corn usually leads to oversupply. Oversupply leads to lower prices to the farmer. That's what we're seeking to avoid.
Bias says a lot of carbon exits an ethanol plant through its smokestack.
So they capture that carbon going up the smokestack. They process it and compress it, and it's shipped through pipelines to areas of the country where you can safely store it, where it has some structure to be able to put it into the ground and cap it and keep it forever. In the Midwest, Those two locations right now are North Dakota and Illinois. And so you have a wide swath of the ethanol industry that's located in between those two locations. And so you have to get it to the areas that the rock formation will allow it to be kept.
Pipeline placement and construction has been a hot button issue recently. Bias says many people may not realize that there are millions of miles of pipelines around the country.
Shipping carbon by pipeline is the most efficient manner. It's the safest manner. If you had to rail or truck carbon, it's a lot more dangerous transportation mode than pipelines. And pipelines can be safely put into the ground. And I think all the companies involved, and there's several companies that are building pipelines, have all said that they were going to ensure that the yield capability of the land where the pipelines go. They're offering huge lease payments to farmers. And I think what you ultimately will see is the pipelines approved and moving forward to the areas of the country that can store it.
For more information, go to AmericanCarbonAlliance.org. Chad Smith reporting.
Dopton New Product Winner Contest is now open. Every year, new products such as electric tractors, autonomous sprayers, data collectors, and many other new technologies are being introduced to the ag industry through the World Ag Expo's Top 10 New Product Contest. This week, the competition opened up its application period. Entrants must be exhibitors at the 2024 World Ag Expo and have products released anywhere in the world between February 10th of this year and February 15th of next year. Gary Thompson, COO and co-founder of Gus Automation, said, quote, "Winning our first top 10 award when we debuted Gus at the 2018 World Ag Expo gave us instant publicity across the agriculture industry. The media attention that came from it drove awareness to our customer base, which helped generate our first sales. We truly feel honored to have been named a top 10 winner three times now, and we'll continue to present our new innovations for this prestigious award. The application deadline is October 31st of this year. If you'd like to find out more information, you can visit worldagexpo.com.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.